Hello and welcome to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please, or interview the program. I'm your host, Wayne Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Anything going on today, Blake?
Yeah, I think so, but I think it's better for me to kick that back to you. There is bigger news than whatever the Raptors injury report looks like right now.
Let's just get this out the way. I already made the announcement on Twitter, but I am leaving the Raptors Show at the conclusion of this season. We still have, Monday and Tuesday, we will still be here to do shows to, you know, address locker room clean out and things like that. But I'm leaving the Raptors Show. It's my decision to leave. I just want to say a huge thank you to the entire team that made this possible. I know when we do the outros and things like that, I always speed through them because we're up against the clock usually. But there's an entire team here at Sportsnet who have like made this entire dream possible. And I know for me, when I first came into the building like 3 years ago, I was so ecstatic. I think this was a dream. This is a dream opportunity for anybody to cover the Raptors, but especially to this degree, especially to the degree that this station has invested in this program. And, I got to work with two of my really, really close friends, the two co-hosts I had asked for, Alex, who obviously has also moved on, and also Blake. I'm just incredibly thankful for this opportunity. And most importantly, I'm very thankful to all the fans who have listened. I will still be in the Raptor space. Don't worry. There's like, you know, this is clearly my entire life. But it is something that's been so deeply personal, this project. And, I'm just really proud of sort of where it's gone. I mean, I just remember like the first day of working on the Raptor Show, like the very, very first day, we got sent to Raptors Media Day. That was 2021. And immediately we got sit downs with Scottie Barnes. We got sit downs with Gary Trent Jr. and I believe Malachi Flynn. And then midway through the whole thing, Fred VanVleet walked by our booth and was like, oh, you upgraded? Oh, you upgraded from Blog Boy to this really official sort of setup right here? And he actually just skipped this other booth that he was supposed to go to. And he actually just came to chop it up with us. And honestly, from day one, it was like, that's way more access than we ever gotten. And of course, that's only possible through, the scope and the reach of this company and this program. So, yeah, just incredibly proud, and it is something that's been on my mind for quite a while. It's something I feel like I haven't really said to a lot of people. Obviously, when it comes to things like this, it does take, a very calculated kind of like messaging to sort of get out. But at the same time, I think from my heart, I put so much myself into this. I know the other people who worked on the show did as well. And it's incredible that a passion project was able to make it to this network and succeed on this network, be different on this network. And I'm always going to be very, very thankful for my time here. So, yeah.
And now we all know the backstory of how you first got on Fred's payroll.
That was it.
Man, the Fred VanVleet Show with Will Liu next.
That'd be fire. I'm not going to lie. Fred, hit me up again, please.
speaking as a fan of yours, for people who don't know, we go back to the Raptors Republic days, right? Yeah. Like, you emailed me the first blog you ever wrote. You were JV Hive day one.
I was begging you. That was the thing. I begged you in that email. I'm like, Blake, please publish me for free on Raptors Republic.
For free for sure at that point in Raptors Republic. These spoiled blog boys now getting their like $5 an article.
Oh, wow.
Or whatever. I have seen your career grow from that to, you know, we worked together at the Score and then obviously here. And, obviously there is a real talent there and your passion cuts through no matter what you're doing. But it's been really, really cool as your friend and as someone who's known you since the start of your career to see, you know, each successive step. And you wonder, okay, like, you know, you went from blog to being on a news desk at the Score. How is that adjustment going to go? You and Alex create this awesome thing that you guys have, and it's very personal and it's very culture oriented, and it's not something that exists in the mainstream media market. And you wonder, how is that going to translate to the mainstream media market?
I was wondering that as well.
I'm sure Sportsnet was too.
Yeah.
And it's just been really cool that at each successive level, at each new challenge, you've killed it. And Alex as well. Alex is a part of what I'm saying here as well on the podcast side. As your friend and as your coworker at several different stops, it's been awesome to see you rise to each of these new challenges. I'm really excited to see what you and Alex do with this next new challenge. I think from a craft standpoint, the 3 years you've been here, the amount you've improved as a host, as an interviewer, the fact that every player we have on like you have an immediate rapport with them. Like everyone is comfortable with you, even guys at the NBA level. It says a lot about you as a person and as a professional. And I know that that comes from grinding at games and things like that, the stuff that people maybe don't see, but also the care you put into the craft and the passion you put into these projects. So that's been really cool to see as your friend and your coworker. And yeah, man, I'm really excited to see what you and Alex are going to do next.
I appreciate you, man. Honestly, I think we're going to do this for like another few minutes and then we'll talk about actual Raptors content. But yeah, for me personally, Blake, like, you know this, but not just begging you for getting on Raptors Republic, but you know, for a while there, I was just following your footsteps. When you left for the Score, I kind of took over a lot of like the main duties at RR as well. That's obviously where I got my start. And I was so blessed to met you, to met Zarar. Zarar already had a podcast at that time. He was really ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Like the Rapcast has been around forever and it's had multiple different hosts. I was just very lucky to have it at a very prominent time and was able to grow and develop and bring things like the Reaction Podcast. But you know, when you went to the Score as well, I know for my first ever job, I also begged you. And I was like, Blake, please hand my resume in. And you did. And whatever, I still had the interview for it. I remember being like mad nervous in the Starbucks across the street, actually. Kind of the same nerves I feel now. But yeah, I was just able to work with you and learn so much from you. We did Raptors Weekly Extra as well for a while in your apartment.
After your soccer games.
Yeah, I was bringing my stinky cleats into your house. I appreciate that, and I apologize. We just kind of like kept going on this sort of like this twin journey. And one of the coolest moments is still like, I've told the story a few times now, but game six, there was like, as we remember, that huge delay because I think Draymond called timeout, but there were no timeouts or something like that. Then they had to check the clock. It was like a solid like period there where the Raptors had the game won. It was just like a matter of formality at that point. And I think I grabbed your arm and I was like, holy crap, like we're here.
There's a good pic of us after they won the Eastern Conference Championship too.
There is?
That, yeah, you're like hugging me.
Oh, yes,
like down underneath the...
That was like 3 a.m.
Yeah, that was really late.
That was so
like,
late.
And there were still people on the street when I left to walk home after.
Right. After beating the Bucks. No, but seriously, I've just been really indebted, and I think that like...
Not indebted, that's not...
No, that's how I personally feel, you know, and I'm always going to be very grateful, you know, when they ask... The whole thing is like, we got to give a huge thank you to Dan Tolman, right? He brought me to Yahoo in the first place. That gave me the opportunity of a lifetime to cover the Raptors championship. It's my first time covering the beat full time as well. And then when he came over here to run Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we kind of had the similar conversation of like, can we bring the show to a bigger audience? And at that point, there wasn't a daily Raptors show that was being invested in anywhere across the country to that degree. And I think that, you know, Dan took a big risk there, but he also took a big risk on me being able to deliver with that. And of course, I asked from the co-hosts and they gave me those, you know, Alex and then you as well. Even from the very start, it was Blake Murphy Tuesdays. You know, I think I went through, I couldn't fully verify, but there's like 913 episodes of the Raptor show that have been put out in like the last 3 years, which is basically once a day. I'm just really happy to have done it with you guys more than anything else. It's been really, really cool, man.
And I appreciate it, man. Obviously as a guest and then joining you guys kind of full time this year. Yeah, it's been awesome. And I'll still be around.
Yeah, so what's going to happen to the Raptor show or just Raptors coverage on the station?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have the answer for that.
Okay, okay.
But obviously Sportsnet is like, and this is a credit to you and Alex as well, is like, it is that the risk you're talking about of like, hey, there's not a daily Raptor show, there should be, like, this is mostly because of you and Alex, but like the audience is there. People want Raptors content, and that's why people
are going to... I don't think that's a credit to us. I think that's like, look, if I'm going to be completely honest about it, like the Raptors like fan base has been like, very underserved as compared to the Jays fan base and the Leafs fan base.
Yeah.
And I think my whole thing was just like, let's just get it to on par or at least close to on par.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, different too, right? Like the way you and Alex approach it is obviously very like, I like coming on with you guys and doing the analytical stuff, but you guys hit the team and what it means to be a basketball fan in a lot of different ways. And that's why people will follow you next. And I think for fans in general, it's a win to have, you know, there's going to be one more product out there, right?
Right.
For sure. You know, I think that's a win for the listeners and the fan base as well. Sportsnet is going to continue on covering the Raptors like they cover other teams. I'm still going to be at the station. Jays Talk Plus starts next Thursday. I don't have all the specific answers, but yeah. I think for today, though, we can keep the focus on you and, where you're going and the fact that, we've already seen the Twitter response start to roll in, but people are going to be excited and people are going to follow you.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. And again, none of this was possible without the fans of the program. And yeah, I guess I'll explain more in due time when I have more details, but I am still going to be in the Raptors space. There's actually nowhere else for me to go. Let's be honest, right? Like I'm kind of dedicating my life to covering the Raptors.
I feel like you could do NBA wide too. Like you're very
I don't know.
Yeah. You're
that.
Very pot committed to basketball for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right.
It'll be good. It'll be exciting. I'm sure people will be excited when they get all the details. And then certainly as we roll into, you know, obviously we're about to hit a bit of a dead period here for the Raptors, where best you'll get is some tweets about, hey, here's who's working out at OVO Athletic Center today. Miss the days when those were open to media and I lived there, basically.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm not even kidding. I walked upstairs because I got to the office like mad early today. Sat down in one of the meeting rooms and just like thought about what I was going to say, how I was going to post everything. And just in general, I was mad nervous. I didn't really want to bring that energy around you guys before the show. We are on air after all. But as when I did come upstairs and I walked over to your computer, I'm not even kidding. Blake Murphy was looking up David Johnson. David Johnson. What were you looking up David Johnson for?
So I have a piece coming tomorrow just kind of on where the franchise hasn't hit as high a rate on the player development side of things. Obviously, there are some good things. Like, I think Javon is showing he can be in the mix as a bench guy next year. You know, so I have a spreadsheet going of every 10-day and two-way they've ever had. So I was just double-checking. Oh, I couldn't remember which G League team David Johnson was on. It's Memphis Hustle, obviously.
How
could I forget that? But, yeah, so that's what I was checking.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
You do stay on brand. Well, listen, I think pivoting back to this season with the Raptors, so I think we can all very much agree that this year was quite painful and it did not go according to plan, right? I think we can analyze what's going to happen with the offseason, what kind of went wrong this year. I think we have the shows Monday and Tuesday to look at those.
By the way, programming note, we're expecting Raptors, at least the Raptors players, to do locker clean out on Monday morning.
Right.
We don't know how that'll line up with our schedule in terms of, you know, taking you to that live, but we'll certainly be reacting to anyone who spoke, you know, kind of in the 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. So if you're looking for locker clean out day stuff, we still don't, we don't know when or if Messiah is going to speak, but the player stuff will be coming to you Monday for.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to, I mean, look, every Messiah State of the Union is quite important and monumental, but
our time slot's not long enough for it anymore though.
Oh yeah, that is true actually. Well, you know, we'll see. I think everyone is also pivoting a little bit off this season because it has been such a grind, and so that's why I thought today we can look at what can the Raptors do to avoid a repeat of this season, because I do think that for everybody involved you would want that to happen. You would want this to be the one year you step back, you take your lumps, and then you move forward. I know there's certainly a camp that's like maybe you tank a second year as well. I wouldn't say that's off the table.
So, the argument for that would be, especially if your pick conveys to San Antonio this year, the argument would be, well, next year's draft class is supposed to be significantly better, at least at the top. So having a top five pick in a draft like that where you actually control your own pick, you could make the argument. However, to that, I would say two things. One is that organizational, culturally, teaching winning habits-wise, et cetera, I don't know how long you want a guy who, like, Scottie Barnes is going to sign a max extension this offseason. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Quickley is going to sign his second deal. RJ's on his second deal. Like, I don't know how long you want to be in the weeds of losing a lot when some of your guys are ready. You could just, bad habits set in, guys get unhappy, whatever.
Yeah.
Second thing, though, is that if you look at, like, the Raptors are in sixth to last right now. Everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong.
Yeah.
And they're still only sixth last. You add back in Scottie Barnes for a full season, Jakob Poeltl for a full season, Kelly's here now, Emmanuel Quickley and RJ are here now. You add a couple draft picks. You have cap flexibility this summer. It's hard for me to picture. Now, I don't think they're going to be like a 55-win team who blows everyone away, and we can save some of that for the second segment.
Oh, don't worry. I'm about to eat part of the set as I go. Those soup cans up in here, I'm going to have one.
But I do think the path to be assuming some level of health and you have a decent offseason, it's hard to imagine this team only winning 25 games again if like again, we'll talk about some of the jump stuff in the second segment, but like, what if Scottie comes back better? What if RJ and Emmanuel come back better? What if Jakob Poeltl's healthy? What if you nail the draft picks that you have in the first round or singular draft pick you have in the first round, however it shakes out? What if Grady's better? What if, like, the, by the way, great piece from Michael Grange at sportsnet.ca.
Oh my God, phenomenal.
Everyone should go check
that
out.
That was really good.
Yeah, not only, like, just a great profile on Grady and his family and upbringing generally, but also about the kind of conditioning stint he did mid-season and how he's gotten back to here. But let's say all of those things click that you'd want to click as a developing team. It gets a little hard to picture this team only winning 25 games again.
Yeah, look, I don't think they'll win 25 games again. But at the same time, we could acknowledge that, you know, there is potentially a strategy if they would want to go in that direction, because that 2025 draft is quite good. Yeah. And I think that, you know, with anything else, there'll be pivot points.
Do you believe me yet that Ace Bailey's a real name?
I did see some footage of Ace Bailey, I think courtesy of Lee Van Osman, who's out there in Portland for the Nike camp. Thanks to Lee Van for bringing that up. But, like, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the draft that people might want to hit for. And I think that there is certainly a big part of the fan base that's like, now that we're this low in the standings, we might as well try. And that's something in the background. But in general, I don't think people want to see a repeat of this year. And so if we're going to avoid a repeat of this season, I have three things that I think the Raptors really need to do. Okay, number one, they have to improve on defense. The Raptors this season are 25th in defensive rating. The teams below them are the Atlanta Hawks, who at least have a really good offense. But, I mean, even them, they're below 500. The Detroit Pistons, who are the Detroit Pistons. The Washington Wizards, who are the Washington Wizards. The Charlotte Hornets and the Utah Jazz, who are the only team that have tanked harder than the Raptors in the second half of the season here. 25th on defense. They're even worse than Indiana, who don't even want to play defense. Okay, so in any case, I think this – what's the defensive ceiling of this group as is right now? Because we do know many of the core pieces, at least, around it. How good can we realistically expect this team to be defensively?
I mean, certainly better. Jakob Poeltl is probably the most important individual defender that they have. And I don't mean that to be he's the best defender. Scotty has the potential to be the best defender. Quickly, what we saw in New York should be a better defender. And you can kind of go down the line. But in terms of how the defensive ecosystem works, what we've seen in the on-off impacts the last 2 years, they need Jakob back healthy to stabilize that defense. Now, even when he was in there, they were still only around like 20th. So it's not going to fix everything. So that's got to be better. They have to, I think, find a better balance between the Nick Nurse level aggression that we saw, where it was like force turnovers and make teams uncomfortable at all costs.
Yeah.
And what we've seen this year, which is they're very conservative.
Yeah, they're defensively. They're actually pretty good at not fouling. Of course, if you don't play a lot of defense, you might not foul that much.
This is the thing. We've seen the two extremes the last couple years It's like, we'll accept fouls and we'll accept botched gambles and stuff like that because turnovers are so important and the transition game is so important. They've maintained the transition offense pretty well this year, but they've gone super conservative in terms of trying to force turnovers, fouling, things like that. And you'd hope that by being conservative like that, you could be more steady and more stay at home, keep your man in front of you, force shots from worse positions on the floor. But they haven't done that.
Yeah.
They haven't gotten the benefits of being more conservative. So they need to find a better balance. So Jakob's one. They need to find a better balance between those two extremes of aggression. And then I think the biggest one is, and this is partially on Scotty, but it's partially on the front office and Darko in terms of what they see philosophically. They have to pick what role they want Scotty in defensively, where we saw him thrive at times this year and look unbelievable as that lower third of the floor help side chaos defender. And then we saw the team try him. Hey, we want him on the top guy. We want him on the perimeter. We want him trying to navigate screens, even though that's not as natural to him as the help side stuff. I think they need to lock in what that's going to look like. That'll help Scotty with his defensive development, that role certainty. But it also helps you when you're looking at your offseason and filling in other roles, knowing where Scotty's going to be on the floor and how you're going to use your best individual defensive weapon kind of informs where else you need defenders.
Okay, so I think based on what we saw this year, it's probably best to use Scotty as a help defender rather than like defending on ball. Maybe there's certain assignments where you definitely want defending on ball. There's certain, you know, games where you especially want your star player to like take over and just like say, I got him defensively. And we've seen that at times from Scotty this year. So that's really good. But in general, I think that when you look at the starting five with Quickly, with RJ, with Scotty and Jakob already set in, we don't know who the fifth guy is. It could be Gary. It could be someone new. It could be someone off the bench. But realistically, that fifth guy really needs to be able to play some really damn good perimeter defense.
And ideally, you know, you're probably not going to be able to, we've gone over the free agent class, right? It's not a great free agent class. I don't think you're going to get someone who is bigger than RJ. So RJ can be nominally the two defensively and you have some of that size back and is also a good 3-point shooter and also fits with what the other guys are.
And also wants to come to Toronto in a losing season. Let's be honest, right?
You're not going to check all those boxes. Maybe you could check it by trade. Maybe use the Bruce Brown thing and one of the three draft picks you have or something like that. You know, people feel different ways about trading draft picks, but Masai kind of made it clear post-deadline that's a possibility. Maybe you address it that way. But I think given who's available and given the possibility of, say, keeping Bruce Brown or re-signing Gary Trent, the likelier is RJ's kind of the three. Mm-hmm. And then whoever that two guy is adding more, you know, if it's Gary, it's adding more spacing than defensive value. And then the challenge becomes individually guys stepping up. It's hard to imagine they find a move that checks, that does both of those things, kind of offensively with the spacing and defensively with the size. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, then it'll come down to, you know, how do you work those bench rotations? How do you make sure there's a stability there? And how do you make sure, honestly, like, and part of this is going to be Quickley's got to be better. He hasn't been as good defensively here as he was in New York.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason they traded for him is they see a defensive upside there.
Yeah, I think my bigger question, too, is with coaching as well. I think that was one thing that you really did appreciate with Nick was all the tricks he would pull out of his bag defensively. There's a clear defensive identity. As you mentioned, it was really predicated on being aggressive, almost gambling, over gambling at times. But at least there was sort of that like ethos and that like emphasis. I think what part of what Nick did with that defense was he was like, look, the offense sucks. So we're going to need to force as many steals as possible so that we can, you know, use our defense to supplement our offense. I think with Darko, he's like, the offense doesn't have to suck. Here's a different way to play. And I think the offense has flown a lot better, even with less and less talent on the roster. But at the same time, defensively, I think it's kind of just like a pretty standard setting based on what we've seen this year. Maybe occasionally see a zone here or there. I'm sure there are some small adjustments as you would see, you know, on average across the league, but there's nothing distinguishing about the Raptors defense. And I do think that my concern stems from the start of the season. You know, the Raptors had 1 month this year when they were above average defensively. It was October.
Yeah.
They played four games. They were fourth on defense in those four games. There's just been a slide ever since. November, they were 15th, and then December, they were 22nd. When you look at before OG Anunoby was traded, that starting five was actually quite healthy. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, when you looked at it on paper, Dennis is a good on-ball pressure, you know, guy defensively. OG's OG, obviously. You know, Jakob, Pascal, Scotty is a pretty good defensive front court. Huge defensive front court with some versatility as well. They were healthy for the majority of that as well. And the Raptors were still 22nd on defensive rating before OG was traded.
So healthy, in fact, that we were like, why won't you change the starting lineup at one point when it just kept not working? But yeah, and that slide, you know.
So how much of that is on coaches?
Yeah, and I remember in November, like, and look, some of the coaching element here is maybe, you know, is OG entirely locked in? Is Pascal entirely locked in? And not as a knock on those guys, but there is a real psychological factor when your name's in trades every week and you don't know what your future is and you don't know, you know, what the organization thinks of you. That's a real human element.
Yeah.
Also, you know, Darko's brand new, right? And I don't know if he would I don't know if this is actually the case, but it certainly seemed from how they came out early in the year in training camp and stuff like that, a lot of the focus was on the offense.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Defensively, they were going to be, and this makes sense given the talent they had at the start of the season, defensively, their game plan was basically, well, we have good defenders, so go out and defend. Mm-hmm. Let's rework the offense and build offense here because we were 29th in half-court offensive rating last year or whatever.
Goodness.
But defensively, the good defenders just defend, and that obviously didn't play out. And, you know, on the kind of psychological or is it at the player level thing, I think an early warning sign that we were losing our minds about in mid-November was the transition defense was really bad.
Yeah.
Which when you're a huge, switchy, athletic team and anyone is supposed to be able to guard anyone, transition defense is supposed to be the thing that you're really, really good at. Mm-hmm. That's an attention to detail. That's everyone's getting back, everyone's locking in thing. And that was an early warning sign. So there's probably a coaching element there. I would imagine in the second half of the season, especially this last quarter of the season, basically the defensive coaching has been like, let's try to help these guys. Like you're not doing a lot with guys who are only going to be there for 10 or 20 days who aren't like these. Some of the guys playing rotation minutes are not ready for NBA rotation minutes and stuff like that. It's probably been oversimplified the last several weeks because
it's like you can't really fully judge anything based on that. But I do think at the start of the season there was a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Like there was an alternate universe where the Raptors could have made the talent work a lot better. But
yeah,
you know, we've been long since past that point. Point number two was just protect Jakob Poeltl at all costs.
Raptors 4-25 without him or something?
Yeah, maybe 4-26 as they keep losing.
Yeah, I can't remember if that counts the two wins the other day or not.
It does.
Okay.
It does, because for a very long time, they were like 2-24, which, I mean, it does obviously speak to
nasty.
The lack of depth at center at the points where before Kelly caught in. But even with Kelly in, I think there is no replacing defensively what Jakob did for this group. And yeah, I mean, his injuries, and it was two injuries. It was the one where they were in Golden State and he was catching an inbound pass, and him and Pascal kind of, you know, he stepped on Pascal's foot. They were both kind of going for the ball. It's just really unfortunate, a random play that really torpedoed the Raptors' run at that point. And then afterwards, you know, obviously Jakob getting hurt right after Scotty got hurt as well. It's been difficult. This team does not win without Jakob.
The on-off metrics are pretty crazy. So when we look at how a team defends with a player on the floor versus off the floor, we have a pretty large sample of Jakob Poeltl's entire career, him impacting the defensive side of the ball. The only year he didn't, weirdly, was his sophomore season, which was the bench mob year. And I don't know, who knows?
Sure,
it's a blip. Last year when he came to the Raptors, he was the 98th percentile among all big men in how you impacted a team's defense on and off the court. Now, some of that is going to be like...
Sounds like a top 10 center. Sounds like a reasonable trade a first-round pick.
A first-round pick in 3 seconds. We're talking about one... Uh-huh. We're talking about, yes, one side of the floor, and then also the fact that, you know, obviously on-off stuff, and we try to control with these stats, try to control for who you're on the court with and stuff like that, but it's always going to look a certain way if there's no backup center behind you, and you're the center. So 98th percentile, though, last year, impact, and then 88th percentile this year. So, again, among bigs, there are only a handful of bigs. The list earlier in the year was like Jokic, Miles Turner, Joel Embiid, one name that I'm missing that was maybe Hartenstein, and then Jakob. Like, those are the five big men who are having the biggest on-off impact on the defensive end. So even if you think that wouldn't be as extreme as they add better depth or whatever, obviously he's really important there. That's especially true, you know, with defensive rebounding as well. They just couldn't grab defensive rebounds without him on the court. Because
that's
again,
a huge part,
you don't have a backup center naturally. Mm-hmm. And you're then, especially post trades, the team went from being gigantic to being so small that they've really gotten crushed in the defensive glass. So getting Jakob back will be, even if 88th or 98th percentile is a little extreme, you would still expect him to have a very big impact on your defense.
Yeah, and I think the good thing here is Jakob's not an injury-prone guy. He really isn't. He's been, for as far as centers go, like really healthy. Played 82 games in his second season as a Raptor. 77 games, 66 games. That was the shortened season. So I think the season is only 70 games. So 66 out of 70 is very good. 69 games the year thereafter, that's quite nice. And then 68 games, 72 last year. And then this year, just 50.
Yeah.
Right? So this obviously is an anomaly. And even the two injuries he suffered were like really just random free kind of incidents.
Yeah, like you play basketball long enough, everyone's going to have a bad ankle roll that costs you 8 or 10 games. Right. Show me the guy who played 10 years in the NBA and didn't have one of those somewhere. And then even you mentioned the San Antonio years where his games totals were in the high 60s.
Oh, they tanked a couple of those games. Yeah,
yes.
For sure.
I forgot about that. Like, how many games did he miss injured? You know, we're talking like 7-8 a season, which totally reasonable for a big man.
For sure. For a guy who doesn't really jump much, you shouldn't get hurt that much either.
How are you going to roll your ankle when you're not off the ground? Mark Gasol, the healthiest guy there is.
It's like me playing all these recreational sports, and I've never tried hard, and I never will. Anyway, last one. Defensively, I try hard offensively. The last one, I think individual players just have to show a lot of individual improvements. This is the thing that, like, you really want to see from Darko and his team, right? They were hailed for the developmental, you know, acumen that they got brought in here. And I think on that level, if you're going to judge based on the developmental frame, Darko's got an A for this season, right? What Scotty has done, RJ, putting him in a new context, he's been really efficient. Quickly's been really solid. I mean, he's been really good anyway, even coming from New York, but he's continued to do that, and he's had some really big games recently too to build on that momentum. Grady, we saw the piece that Grange wrote about. There's all the detail that's gone into it. Also, shout out Ivo Simonic. I'm so happy he got the credit for that one, because literally every single day when you walk into the arena, you see Ivo going with Darko or with Grady for like a half hour workout, and they work out on all the little details that Grange that had wrote about in his piece. But in any case, Darko's was brought in to improve the talent that's here. So the talent here that has to continue to improve, right? It's great that Scotty took a jump forward, RJ took a jump forward, Grady fixed himself midseason, and it's been a really incredible turnaround. But like, there has to be more levels and more jumps to be taken. And I think that, like, yes, we can expect other players to come in and supplement that group, but individually, guys got to get better as well.
It's also, it's funny to look at where, obviously, this is a developmental season, and toward the end of the season, they've been giving new guys a look and stuff like that. Well, four of the five youngest players on the roster are still guys who are rotation pieces for next year, and that's RJ, Ochai, Scotty, and Grady. Those are four of the five youngest guys on the roster. DJ Carton's the only guy younger than any of those guys. Emmanuel Quickley's still only 24, so you've got five guys who are locked into the rotation for next year, who are 24 or younger. And yeah, some of those guys have played in the league for years, and you project development a little differently once you've got 5-6 years in the league and thousands of minutes or whatever, but they're all still very young. There's a lot of room to grow. You know, Quickly's been challenged to expand his role scale-wise coming from New York to here. What does that look like with a whole offseason? RJ's been empowered to do a little bit more and a little bit different here. What does that look like after a whole offseason? Scotty obviously is such an important piece of this franchise that what level he gets to next year might dictate a lot of this, right?
Oh, like, yeah, for sure. Like, absolutely. He's the most important part of the franchise.
Yeah. You know, Grady just being a guy who can play 82 games, 15, 20 minutes a night, and we can have expectations higher than that if we want. But even that compared to this year would be a big step. And that's before getting to, you know, the smaller end guys like, hey, is Javon a guy? Does a whole summer in their development program help him pop? You know, is Gary back, who is still only, you know, what's Gary, 25? So it's not like Gary's old. The old guys on the team are Jordan Warren, Malik Williams, and Mo Gay, and Jalen McDaniels.
How old is Malik Williams? What?
Malik Williams is 25. Jordan Warren is 25.
Uh-huh.
Mo Gay is 25.
He's 25.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jalen McDaniels is 26.
All right. Like, we're here for a good
time.
The
other young guys on the team aren't as young as the main young guys, which is encouraging, right? It maybe means Mo G has played, like, his path has been so long and so many stops to get here that just certainly developmentally you think maybe there's, like, but with Jalen McDaniels, it's like, okay, you probably are who you are. Malik Williams, you know, interesting as a 10-day guy. He did 5 years at Louisville and, you know, he's an older prospect at this point. It's exciting, though, that five of your core 8 or 9 guys are 24 and younger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, they did do the difficult thing this year. They pivoted, you know, and for once, I actually know how hard that is. So we're going to go take this break. I'm going to eat part of this set. I'm not leaving without having some chunky spicy soup. So we're going to do that after this break. I'm going to share some more spicy takes. But yeah, we're going to take this break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Luke. To be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Very much savoring these last few episodes. And speaking of savoring, I did promise I was going to eat a part of the set, and I have. If we could just pan over, we've obviously had these cans here, and there's been 5 of them stacked on a pyramid. Amit Mon, producer, has been diligently, I'm not even kidding, every episode before the show, he comes in and he stacks these babies. There's finally one missing, because on the subject of next season, I have some spicy predictions to bring you, courtesy of our friends at Campbell's Chunky Spicy Soup. And I have this bowl right here of spicy chicken noodle that you've heard me brag about in pretty much every ad over the last like few months. So here goes another taste test. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have some soup, and then I'm going to toss a spicy or not spicy take at Blake Murphy. He's going to tell him if it's spicy or not. And there's just going to be predictions for next season. You ready to, Blake?
Yeah. Also, I just want to say there were more cans than 5, but then I had surgery and I was like, I can only eat soup and crackers for a couple of days. So there used to be more cans around here. My bad.
Yeah. All right. Prediction number 1. Raptors back in the play-in next season. Blake Murphy, spicy or not spicy, as I go for another taste test here.
Play-in? Mm-hmm. They don't have to win the play-in?
Let's make it spicier and put it in the play-in. Although this is really spicy.
Just in the play-in. Okay, that's that's not too spicy. That's pretty. That's, I don't know, what is their scale? It's 2 out of 5. Maybe not even 1.5 out of 5 spice.
Not spicy enough.
The Raptors are, what are they, 11 games out right now?
They're 11 games out of the play-in, man.
Yeah.
That ain't spicy that they jumped 11 wins.
Well, something that helps in this case is there's only one team between them and the play-in. Like, Brooklyn's the only other team. So, you know, yeah, Charlotte, Washington, Detroit could all be better. But is Brooklyn going to be better? Is Atlanta going to be better? Chicago heading into an interesting offseason with some key free agents. Are they going to be better? Obviously, of those teams that we just mentioned, you know, Toronto is pretty well set as far as prospects and like young rotation players and draft equity this year goes. I don't think it's that spicy that the Raptors could get back into the play-in.
I was going to make it super spicy and say the Raptors in the playoffs next year, as in top 6. But then I also looked at the standings, and there's a 20-win gap between them and Philadelphia right now.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that would have been...
That would have been a little too spicy, probably.
Yeah. Not like the soup. This is just perfectly spicy. Okay, prediction number two. Spicy or not spicy, Scottie Barnes makes another jump and is named to the All-NBA teams next year.
That's spicy. I'll say that's a 4 out of 5 spicy.
Okay.
The... Look, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Scottie Barnes took a jump this year and became an all-star for the first time, but there are 26 all-star spots and there are only 15 all-NBA spots. So you're saying, you know, he went this year into, and 26 all-star spots is like, there were a couple extra for injuries and things like that too.
That's how Scottie got in.
So yeah. let's say he was a top 30 player when all-star stuff got done. He was on the right trajectory.
He was, yeah,
but
he was.
Each successive jump is harder than the last. And when you look at how tough the All-NBA ballots are, I'm not ruling it out, but I definitely think that's a spicier take than the play-in. Mm. They're also kind of related takes, because if Scottie takes that jump, then I feel really good about them making the play-in.
I'm trying to parlay these three, basically what I'm trying to tell you. But yeah, so post Siakam trade, Scottie was at 28-8. Unfortunately, the Raptors were 7-12, but like, you know what? Let's just put that aside for a second. I thought he was really productive, really integral to what the Raptors needed to do. And I think that... it's not out of the question. Like, once you make All-Star, like, the next thing you look at is how do you make All-NBA? How do you start for the All-Star game? Those are all, like, you know, great goals to try to aim for, and they become realistic when you make your first All-Star game. So, yeah, I think we all believe that Scottie has the potential and the ability to do it. It's just about how quickly he gets there. And
to some degree, the team around him. Because,
oh, like, for sure. Like, you don't do this unless you're, like, a winning team.
If you're the best player in the league, then, yeah, you're going to make All-NBA, whatever. There are instances of guys.
Yeah, if you're LeBron and you're like Steph Curry, you're the 10th seed, it's like, yeah, actually, you're still going to be All-NBA.
Yeah, but if you are trying to do it for the first time and you are a younger player, your team's got to be good, too. Because, again, like with All-Stars, where coaches kind of go down the standings, media vote on All-NBA, but there is definitely a team component there.
All right. Spicy or not spicy, prediction number three, RJ Barrett or Emmanuel Quickley, one of the two, is named All-Star for next year.
That's spicy. Okay. I think that might be as spicy as the Scottie Barnes All-NBA. And again, kind of related.
You mean I got to do the Idris Elba meme right now? Sorry. That was more like a Jada kiss.
Yeah. So yeah, that one's tough. I mean, neither of them were particularly close this year. They could get there numbers-wise, but again, this is going to be all these takes being related.
Yeah.
You're only getting two All-Stars if you're in, like, the top 4 or 5 in the East, probably.
Right.
Like, a play-in level...
Like, even the Celtics only got two.
Yeah, like, a play-in level team. Like, the Hawks couldn't... Trae Young only got in his injury replacement, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he did.
And then the Bulls didn't have anyone there.
Nope.
The Heat didn't. The Heat had Jimmy.
Yeah. Is Bam an All-Star this year?
Oh, yeah. So they had two. Bam was voted in.
Yeah.
So the Heat were a play-in team that had two, but they're the Heat. They're coming off a finals run and stuff like that.
Are they All-Stars, man? I feel like Jimmy wasn't an All-Star.
Maybe Jimmy wasn't an All-Star. Maybe he hadn't played enough games. Mm. Anyway, so either way, he was not an All-Star this year. There you go. So they only had one as well. So as a play-in team in the East, you probably need to be outside of the play-in to get two guys. And then also one of those guys has to take a leap because, you know, RJ's going to have the points totals. Emmanuel Quickley have nice points and assists. But if you're not at least a 500-ish team when people vote, I don't think, like, the coaches aren't putting two of your guys on there.
All right. This is pure propaganda. But let me hit you with some of the numbers, too. So RJ, since joining the Raptors, 21 points per game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting 55% from the field, 40% from three. Not going to say the free throw percentage just doesn't help the propaganda effort here. But
also, like, you're saying, so 21, 6, and 4 on 55-40 shooting.
That's pretty good.
Is really, really good. Trae Young only made the All-Star team as an injury replacement.
Yeah.
Now he was like 30-10.
Yeah.
It's tough out there, man. Especially in the offensive explosion. Like, we did these numbers earlier in the year where the number of guys averaging 25 a game now is the same as the number of guys who were averaging 20 a game like 7-8 years ago.
There was a bit of inflation.
Like 25 is the new 20.
Yeah. And then IQ at 19, 5, and 7. I mean, like, look, if one of these two things happen, like, as in terms of one of them makes All-Star level, the Raptors season has gone phenomenally.
Yes.
So
I'm going to kick a question back to you here.
Okay. Before I say that, though, can I just say thanks once again to Campbell's Chunky Spicy Soup for sponsoring the Raptors show this season. Never thought I'd be eating soup on air as my job, and it's a wonderful, wonderful perk of doing this. So big thanks to the Chunky. All right, what are you going to throw it back
at? Can't wait until Tuesday when I take all these home because there's no more shows to have them on board for. Sorry, Amit, I got dibs.
We're about to throw soup at each other like the Cavs back in the day.
Oh, yeah, tortilla soup, J.R. Smith. What a time for investigative reporting in the NBA. So you made three predictions there. The Raptors are back in the play-in. Mm-hmm. Scottie Barnes makes another jump to All-NBA. And RJ Barrett or Emmanuel Quickley are named All-Star. Again, obviously those three things are at least somewhat related because everyone being better together will push certain things higher. Which one are you most confident in happening? And if you could only pick one, which would it be?
Honestly, the Raptors back in the play-in.
Okay.
Yeah. And not to say the play-in is like the be-all end-all. No one's like, oh man, I can't wait to be in the play-in.
36-44 Hawks?
No, I mean like I can't wait for the 82-game season again to be like meaningful.
Yes.
Like I think at a certain point this year was such a lost season because like it was about who can they trade these guys for? Should they pivot? Obviously, it was pretty clear that they should pivot. The overwhelming response to that, the debates around like, you know, this guy doesn't fit, this guy doesn't fit, this guy's checked out, this all. It was just like, man, it was like, who could we have gotten for this and this? It was about everything except for the basketball on the court. And honestly, if you did make it about the basketball on the court, it was bad basketball.
Yeah.
So
October's a beautiful time.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you can always, like, talk about all these other things. And I think all these things will come with winning. And all the things will factor into the winning. But I can't wait for the 82-game season to be actually meaningful again, to see them being close competitive games. And even if they lose, we break down why they lost. We look at the sort of factors that went into it. Rather than, like, we come in every single day and we're like, hey, Mark Stein, what's the latest on Bruce Brown? Can we get a first-round pick? Like, that was a decrepit time in franchise history. I'm not going to lie. That was tough, me just begging Mark Stein to say there's a first-round pick out there for him, which he never did, by the way.
No, and apparently there was not. Otherwise, I don't think Bruce Brown would be a Toronto Raptor.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, I want the games to matter again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at the schedule here and trying to remember the last time. Like, obviously, the OG trade kind of signaled that the games didn't really matter anymore at that point, even though that was only 32 mm-hmm. games into the season. But you can go back pretty far. Like they hit a pretty good stretch of losing in late November where it was like the writing was on the wall. So we got like 6 weeks of like, hey, maybe this. And obviously there are things that matter. Scotty matters. Like I'm not saying none of it matters, but in terms of like being really emotionally invested in the outcomes of individual games and if they didn't go your way, the why and how to fix that, we got like 6 weeks of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot.
Yeah. It's been a lean year. It's been a lean year.
Dude, they lost 15 in a row. I hate looking at the schedule page. I don't know why I'm doing this.
It's actually pretty incredible. I feel like it did fly by, though. Like, when I was looking at the, just like what you're doing right now, looking at all the games in order in the spreadsheet, and I look at each individual line, and I do remember, like, specific things about every single game. Now, of course, that comes with, like, doing the coverage. And by the way, I did get an update from producer JR. JR Manitad informed me during the break that I think I had said there was like 900 episodes of the Raptor show. There's actually over 1400. There's 1400 episodes of the Raptor show. Still, there will still be four more at least after this one as well too. With the two React pods and the two more shows next week. But like I've only been here like 900 days, man. That's like a pod and a half per day. It's pretty ridiculous, especially considering the fact that there's long off seasons too. But in any case, like I do remember things about each individual game, and it did kind of fly by. And I think at the beginning of it, I was really absorbed game by game. And as you can tell recently, it's just like, all right, we can look at the bigger picture and not look at the thing. And it's like you're intentionally not looking at the main thing because you can't, because they're losing so much.
Also, like, they're not playing players who will matter later. They're not, you know, like, if it would be one thing if the defense had just not improved all year and it was the same guys and you were trying new stuff, or like you couldn't get the basics and they were trying new stuff and they weren't getting that either. But like, yeah, I'm not. I can't get too upset that like a lineup with Jordan Wara, Jaden McDaniels, or Jalen McDaniels rather, and Malik Williams like isn't getting it done defensively. Like it's not.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics of it. Obviously, the games are still fun. The individual stuff matters, but it's like lower fidelity information. Like you're just not getting as much from it. There's not nearly as much signal.
No. What was the other game? You know, one of the people that has had a difficult season this year in terms of just how tough their job has been. Has been Strizzy, who does the intros. And the other
day, it's game on for Javon Freeman Liberty.
Oh man, it's not like we didn't have Ken Burch for a while. We started Ken Burch quite a bit, and his whole thing was representing We the North, number 24 Ken Burch, which we just had a lot of fun times at that. And it's not about like I feel like Strizzy does a great job introing the whole team and everything like that. I just mean that like he's had to create a lot of unique intros this year.
Yeah,
yeah,
there's a
game
lot of,
on for Javon is a new one, man.
Although, hey,
He had a career night the night that happened. It was game on. Speaking of game on, it's time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Yeah. Take a chance. The final one of these of the season, because the Raptors play tonight and then they close the season out on Sunday. They play against a Miami Heat team tonight that needs this game. If Miami were to lose tonight, or Orlando were to win, the Heat are locked into the play-in. Technically, they could get out of the play-in still.
They're pretty much locked in.
They're mostly locked in, but they could also get home court for the play-in, which is important. Exactly. You'd rather host Philadelphia than travel to Philadelphia and then have to travel back to Miami for that second game if they lose. So there is stuff on the line for Miami. As a result, the Raptors are 14.5-point underdogs. The over-under set at 218.5. Bruce Brown and Gary Trent are questionable with the knee and back issues, respectively. The usual guys are out. Nobody listed as resting yet.
That's nice.
On the Heat side, Terry Rozier is questionable with a neck thing. Josh Richardson and Duncan Robinson remain out.
I find it very difficult. I mean, there's just there's two entirely different set of motivations going to this game. I know Garrett already told us yesterday that he expects to play a lot of minutes, and I'm expecting probably game 82, but it could be game 81 as well. I mean, what's the difference, really? In any case, I think that it'd be, look, I mean, we say all this, but we're going to miss watching this team.
Of course.
No matter who they are. Well, that's not true, actually. I won't miss watching Jalen McDaniels, but regardless, like, you will miss watching this team, even though they've been struggling. So I will very much try to soak it in, but I do not expect a competitive game, or I don't expect the Raptors to have any chance of winning this game, quite frankly. I mean, it would be a major disaster for the Heat if they didn't win this game comfortably. So I will obviously back the Heat to this one, and also for game 82 as well. I know no one asked, but I think that's pretty clear. But yeah, I just want to see Grady continue to thrive. It's been really fun watching him. Quickly, RJ, all three of these guys have done really well, and like we mentioned earlier, they're going to need to continue to improve and, you know, finish the year on a high note, even if you are just finishing out the year to finish out the year.
All right. So here's what I want out of this weekend.
Okay.
And I don't mean this disrespectfully to Malik Williams, but his 10-day runs out after tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
All I care this weekend, give me Marquise Noel you can't sign a 10-day anymore. You'd have to sign him for the rest of the season.
Who cares? Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, it still costs the same amount of money. It's just what you have to do. Technically, you can't sign a 10-day. Yes, so you'd have to sign him to rest of season. And I think at this point, it would have to include like a non-guaranteed next year or whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah, you can do whatever. Yeah. I would like to see Marquise Noel, who was really, really fun with the 905, who the fan base really likes. He has a big following. He fought back from hamstring injury and stuff like that. He did play once earlier in the year in garbage time, but I would rather get, 25 minutes of that than, poor Malik Williams, you got to start and play 30 again. And I know the Raptors would be incredibly small, but
hey,
Garrett Temple could play 48 minutes at center.
Yeah. Okay, so first off, that was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance on the Miami Heat this weekend. before we go for this week, who do you think will be the starting five for game 82 of the season?
All right.
Let's put Marquise in there for you, okay? Bobby Webster is listening to the show once again, and he's like, you know what? Blake's totally right. You know what? This is a good idea. We're signing Marquise.
He doesn't even need to start. I just want to see get that.
Let's start him. Let's start him. Okay, and then Garrett Temple's in the starting group. Who else is in the starting group? What's the rotation?
Moji is going to start at center.
Moji's going to start at center. Okay, wow. We're still by the Rama these days, like OMP.
Probably Jordan Wara in there somewhere, and then Grady.
Wow. That's still a lot better than game 82 when the Raptors were in Tampa. That's one of my favorite games of all time. They started Aaron Baines at small forward.
Yeah.
And they were running plays for Aaron Baines as a movement shooter.
Yep. Ken Burch and Freddie Gillespie can't space the floor like Aaron Baines can't. They're not the movement shooters that Aaron Baines is.
It was DeAndre Bembry and Malachi Flynn. And I believe Stanley Johnson only played like 5 minutes or something. Yeah. Basically, they played six guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, and I mean, the Ben Uzo game is another fun game, or I was going to say game 82, but game 66, where like Jamal Magloor started, but only played 5 minutes. Solomon Alabi had like a career high minutes.
Yeah, speaking of Solomon Alabi, you taking Solomon Alabi or Muhammadu Gaye?
Oh, I'm taking Moji. He's got a little more bounce. Yeah, let's see it.
I don't know, man. That's a close one for me. But the fact that that's even close is a tough spot. So anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you listen to The Raptor Show wherever you find podcasts. Please subscribe, rate, and review the program. Thanks once again, producer Almut Mon, for heating the soup. Most importantly, our board producer, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick, David Sis, Jared Manitat, for helping behind the scenes. I'll be back. Two more shows next week.